Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we are talking about the top commanders from Edge of Eternity's Magic's newest set. Well, sort of Magic's newest set. We already got Spider-Man spoilers, but that's actually not really the point of this podcast. But before we get into that, we got a whole crew to introduce. Kicking things off today with Brewer's Kitchen, Phil. What's up, Phil? How's it going today?
Hey, y'all. This is still one of my favorite sets ever. We don't have too many legends, though, which is refreshing, but kind of boring for content. They are cool, though.
Honestly, that's part of the reason I really like this set. I was overwhelmed by legends in some previous sets, and as someone who loves other formats that are not Commander, being legendary is kind of a downside. If you only play Commander, legendary is like pure upside, right? But in other formats, it's kind of annoying sometimes. So it's kind of nice to only see, I think, 22 legends in a set after getting 170 or something in Final Fantasy. But we got another co-host to introduce in Krim. What's up, Krim? Good morning. How's it going?
Good morning. It is so funny that also you just said like only, what, 20-some legendaries?
22, I think, yeah.
I think middle school me may have seen, like, what is it, like 18 five, legendaries, right? Like, that would have been, like, a wild idea. So only 20-some is actually, like, a very refreshing experience, and especially because they all felt like each one of them was made with a lot of love, so I'm excited.
Maybe not the uncommons, but most of them were made with a lot of love. Some of them were made to be signpost draft chaff, but we also have...
Hey, that's a lot of love for a limited.
That is true. Love for that is a good point. I always forget the limited players. We also have one more co-host in Tomer, Budget Commander. How's it going, Tomer?
I just checked, and the original Kamigawa block, which was billed as the legendary block, the entire block, so that was three sets, it was 118... legendary creatures.
Still less than that's Final Fantasy.
So Final that's Fantasy beat him with Final one Fantasy. Set. Yeah.
Wild.
I'm liking
the less legendary count too. I think that's kind of maybe that's how any universe is going to be, because every universe is beyond is going to be every single card's a legendary. So maybe they have to balance it out by like the in universe will just be like a handful.
I'm pretty sure Mark Rosewater actually said that on his blog, that like kind of expect that going forward, that the universe of beyond sets will have a ton of legends because you gotta have all the named characters, and then they were gonna pull back a little bit in the in universe sets because we're getting so many legends in the universes beyond sets. But anyway, we're gonna talk about the top commanders from Edge of Eternities. But before we do, we got a couple of sponsors to shout out. Our show today is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way immunity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely fat. Put a pack in... Did I say fat? Flat. Yeah. Make them completely
pH
flat.
File, though.
Oh, or, yeah, we're going back to 2001.
Put a pack in your storage box and keep your cards flat forever. And you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use the sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about the main set card, the main deck cards from Edge of Eternities, the best cards from the 99. And our top comment comes from LazyDino59, who says, "No Richard here to protect my wallet by saying how every card is unplayable garbage." It does get expensive without Richard around to just trash every card, doesn't it? Thank you for the comment. Keep sending them in. Anyway, let's talk the best commanders from Edge of Eternities. Honestly, it was pretty easy to make this list because with only 22 commanders and like I think six are random uncommons, we're gonna get to go through almost all the rare and mythic legends in the set today. So Phil, why don't you kick us off with a commander that you really like?
All right. Funnily enough, I am starting with an uncommon, which has the same name as a mythic. So even the uncommons are characters that show up on a rare or mythic. So they have very few legendary characters in the set. Very refreshing. Uncommon, though. Tanuk, Memorial Ensign. Is that how you say it? Very simple text box, 3 mana, 2/4. Whenever a land you control enters, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. And then if this is the second time this resolved this turn, draw a card. Which sounds a little boring, but a landfall is fun. You draw cards, and this time it actually kills the opponent. It's not like Tatiova, where you draw cards and gain life, but you actually progress the game. So it's fine, right? It's a good landfall commander this time. It doesn't hurt, at least.
It's the only landfall commander I like. This is literally this is the one, because it's basically landfall Purphoros. It's Gruul Purphoros. You burn people. And it's great. Like, okay, you're going to ramp, you're going to draw cards, you're going to ramp, you're going to draw cards. But in this process, the opponents finally get die. They get the sweet release of death. And I appreciate that. And then, like, you slap on Keen Sense and Snake Umbra. Both are auras that say whenever the enchanted creature deals damage, not combat damage, but any damage, you draw a card. So if the nuke triggers and you have 3 opponents and you deal 1 damage to each of them, if it's enchanted, you draw 3 cards, 1 for each opponent. And, you know, landfall happens quite a lot. So
And if you're building around Tanic, you're going to have fetch lands, you're going to have extra land drops. So you can easily be drawing 6 cards, 9 cards in a turn cycle. On one hand, this is just another landfall commander, right? But I really do like it going into red. I think the number one red landfall commander, probably Omnath Locust of Rage, is the one that would come to mind for me. But I feel like this is so much better, right? Like, Omnath still does its thing, and it's really powerful, but it's 7 mana. This is only 2 mana, which makes it, way easier to, get on the battlefield and start getting value out of it early. And then going into red gives you some cool shenanigans that you don't see in, like, Tetyova and Asai. You can play, like, Ohir Axalon to get even more damage out of it. Torbrand, so you can like actually kind of make it this damagey, burny stack style deck rather than just like a full Undirtle deck, which is what I normally think of as landfalls. Like, oh my god, it's just Phil's gonna draw all the cards and like just get all the value, but we're never gonna die. This is landfall, but you accidentally kill your opponents, which is kind of
Not only it's even a combo piece. Like, it's not too hard with, especially now with the Overlord or something, now that you can create land tokens, you can create infinite land drops even though you don't have infinite lands in your deck nowadays. And also bounce lands and Kodama. So it is even a combo piece in the command zone. So, I mean, we're going to see how good it plays because I'm going to play it on Clash. I assume it's going to be good. I mean, it's still a 3-drop that landfall draws a card. So pretty sure it's very good. I'm not going to lie.
It's kind of limited to drawing, what, once a turn, right? Because it's the second time the ability resolves. But still, that's a lot of card advantage on a 3-drop commander, so.
That's also probably not why you're playing it, right? You're playing burning it, right? Yeah, you'll get some value, but there's better ways to get value anyways. It's the damage that really, like, stands out here. Call it stacks, whatever you want to call it, but I do love, just like Tomer said, there is
damage.
That's a stack piece. Like, it's 10x killing a stack us. Piece.
Yeah, anything that burn. Lightning Bolt is a stack piece.
Yeah.
I just love burn, and I think that anything that allows me to also do it to each opponent, yes, sure, that works against me in the politicking department, because you can't be like, oh, I'll make a deal with you. When effects like this are usually best when you just say, I won't target you, because that's true. But I do really like that this just hits everyone, right? Quick, easy decision, everyone eats one.
I do like it.
I mean, you're the enemy anyways. If you play landfall,
yeah, that's true.
You're justifiably the enemy.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep moving on. What do we got as our next top commander from Edge of Eternity's Tomer?
Hi.
Hello.
I have one. So Krim has my favorite one coming up. But if I had to do a second favorite, I'd have to build another one and put to my personal collection, it would be 100% this one. It's Servandum Sunstar Exemplar. Mm. This is a 2-mana, white and a black, so Orzhov. Legendary creature, human knight. It's a 2/2 with vigilance, menace, and whenever another creature you control dies or is put into exile, put a +1/+1 counter on Servandum, and you gain 1 life. And when it dies or is put into exile while its power is 4 or greater, destroy up to 1 target non-land permanent. So whenever you're doing like aristocrat-y stuff, which black is really good at doing, and whenever you're doing like blinky style stuff, which white is really good at doing, you're passively on this 2-drop growing this creature with counters permanently, gaining a bunch of life, And it has two keywords that are really good in combat. Menace is like okay evasion. It's not the best, but it is okay. And then vigilance means you can always attack every single turn with this and not worrying about the crackback, because this creature gets big really, really fast, gains you a bunch of life passively. And then when it dies, it acts as this repeatable removal engine. So like the way I envisioned this deck, I just played my Cardor deck last night. The way I envision this deck is probably going Aristocrats over Blink, because there's like a lot of Aristocrat support. And the way I see Servandum being played out is you'll have like a bunch of like sacrifice fodder, sacrifice synergy. I'm thinking like Pawn of Ulamog. Whenever something dies, you make an Eldrazi that you can sacrifice for more mana. Every single time you're sacrificing those spawns and stuff, you're growing Servandum. You have Sifter Skulls is the same thing too. There's a bunch of like little things that will grow Servandum super, super fast. You can kill people with Servandum. And then whenever you need to blow something up, you can like sacrifice Servandum at instant speed, put like Undying Malice or something that will make it come right back onto the battlefield. And so you blow something up, high, a big target, and then it comes right back and you keep doing your thing. So I really like this like finisher plus engine plus removal at any given time. But what do you guys think about this?
I mean, it's kind of cool that it's threatening people when it dies. That's kind of cool. So they don't want to attack you. It has vigilance. I think it plays pretty good, just auto politics. Like once you have this on the board, people don't want to deal with you, probably. I assume so.
I imagine whoever kills it, they're probably getting their thing blown up. So it is a pretty good like disincentive to kill it or attack into it.
I think they're going to have to kill it more often than not, too, just because I feel like this is a sweet commander that isn't too busted like whatever the Tasa Karlov. For an Aristocrats deck, because this card will be able to kill people. You'll gain a lot of life. You know, you'll send a lot of things into the graveyard. There's lots of ways to synergize with that between like Essence Channeler, Aerith, and all of that, and then that'll just allow you to move all the counters onto Servandum. Servandum's just gonna grow. I think that's the main thing, real quick. So 21 commander damage is easy, especially when it's a 2-mana card.
Yo, I was just thinking too, like, if you have like Ozolith or something like that, and whenever Servandum's dying, you can keep those, like, Resourceful Defense is another one. You can keep all those counters, and then when it comes back, you put all the counters back onto it. Like, I think it's actually quite effective. Like, it's not card advantage or mana advantage in the command zone, but it's a finisher, and also it's just like repeat removal. Like, I feel like if you just have like a Sack Out Lofit and like Undying Evil or whatever, so it can come back immediately.
I mean, Ghost Form, right? Like,
Kaya's Ghost Form.
Kaya's Ghost Form is a good card. Like this,
so many.
Luckily, reads only when it dies or is put into exile. I kind of wish this read whenever it left play, but I guess if it left play, they'd be kind of nuts, right? So I do think this is a very good card, and it's just nice to always have a versatile answer.
Mm-hmm. It's funny.
But what's the leaf? If you flicker something, it goes into exile as well, right?
Like so if it gets bounced.
If it gets bounced, if it gets Cyclonic like Rift Otawara, or something, you get it. But still, I mean, between exile and dying, it hits on most ways. It would leave the battlefield. Mm-hmm. I will say, I like the card, although honestly, I like it more as a Blink commander than an Aristocrats commander, just because I think it's a fine Aristocrats commander, but I feel like there's a lot of good Orzhov Aristocrats commanders. I feel like there's less good Orzhov Blink commanders. So that's the part that I find most unique. It works really well with the new warp mechanic. I think that's what it was made for, is you can warp stuff and it'll trigger when it goes to exile. Plus, you can play Ketramos, all the Ephemerates and Ketramos, Charming Princes, and Phalia. So you can just play a whole bunch of these like Blink effects and grow this thing really big, and then you can Blink it and blow stuff up. The only other thing I want to mention in Aristocrats that I think is really good is I really like that it can blow up any non-land permanent. So if this is your commander and someone drops like a Rest in Peace or something, which is the nightmare for all your blood artists because it just shuts down all your triggers, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be able to grow this big enough to blow up whatever hate card someone, you know, if you run into a degenerate like, you know, Crim Planks graveyard hating commander, you have a commander that can actually deal with the hate pieces too,
if you can
Blink
it, because you won't have the death trigger, right? Like,
but if it's put in exile, you still get it, right? So the replacement effect would put it into exile.
Oh, if it's put into exile. Right.
Yeah, so it would still trigger,
it works.
Into exile.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
If you bounce it,
If you bounce it, you're out of luck, yeah.
But I think, like, you just have, like, a sock outlet on the board or try to get a sock outlet on the board. And there's, like, so many, like, one-mana blink spells. You can just hold up, like, a ephemerate or whatever, and you're good.
You should be able to, yeah. If you're building around it, you should be able to make it work. But, yeah, super cool card. Well, let's keep moving on. Krim, what's the first commander you got for us today from Edge of Eternities?
Here it is.
The first commander I got is one I built in paper. It's Ragost, Deft Gastronaut, the Lobster Man. I love my little MTG Zoidberg, right? So he's a 2-mana, and what artifacts you control are foods in addition to their other types. So they have the pay 2, sack this artifact, gain 3, and then you pay 1, tap Ragost, and then it deals 3 to each opponent. And then at the beginning of each end step, if you've gained life this turn, untap Ragost. So there is no shortage of things to do where you can fling this, you could fling with this and then give it lifelink through like cards like Spirit Loop or maybe like Basilisk Caller, right? You know, Sheltered by Ghosts. You have so many ways to give it lifelink. And once you give it lifelink, it kind of just gets to double fling, which is like 6 damage to everybody. And that is really good for 1 mana, especially when you can combine it with all the random tokens you can just generate that are artifacts, lander tokens, maps, literally treasures. You're in the colors to do all of this. So and then lastly, you just play, I think, like one of the best cards in the deck that will quietly, probably, actually not very quietly, but will make everyone very mad at you, is going to be Authority of Consoles. I think Authority of Consoles or anything like a Soul Warden, anything along those effects that checks anybody's stuff entering and gaining you a life, now means that you can fling on your opponent's turns and then untap and do it again and again and again. So he kind of really spirals out of control real quick. And that's why, since I built it, I added Marvin, Murderous Mimic, in the deck to also just give me another sack fling. So I absolutely love this card in Commander. It's such a sweet burn deck. And really, this past year, I've just really enjoyed Magic mashing up archetypes and like getting real fun with the design, right? Between Hope, now Mill and Life Gain. Now we have like Burn and Life Gain, right? So Artifact, Burn, and Life Gain. So this is just a sweet, cheap, kind of like fun combination of archetypes.
This is the super best one. This is the best Commander. It's not even a contest. It's a lobster. It's a lobster that cooks delicious meals. I mean, look at the art.
First lobster in Magic?
I mean, he's not a Homerid, right? Because Homerids were kind of like lobsters. So to me, if I recall, he's the only lobster that I can think
of. It might be.
There's only a rock lobster. That's not.
Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying. Yeah, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Commander legal, unfortunately.
I think this card's super cool. It's a super cool card. It's a very powerful card, too. If I'm understanding this right, if you sack a food and you give this lifelink with Spirit Loop or something, you're gaining 9, right? Every time you do that, because each opponent's taking 3 and it's dealing the damage. So you're gaining massive chunks of life. And once you start doing that, it untaps itself and you just sack anything. The other cool thing about this card that we didn't really talk about, it also makes all your artifacts sacrificable. Not just like the easiest way to do it is make a bunch of, you know, tokens that you can sacrifice to their food. But there's some artifacts that like going in the graveyard, and you can get value out of like looping things out of the graveyard or like servo schematics and so forth, like want to be sacrificed because they make tokens. So there's some cool shenanigans there as well. So I like it as like a burn commander, but it's also kind of a cool, like weird artifact aristocrat style commander. And we got some other cards from the set that kind of care about artifacts going to the graveyard or dying. So it's just so flexible. It does a lot of cool things.
It answers, it makes it so if you have a 1 ring, you can sack it when it gets too hot, you know, too spicy. But you also have like Junk Divers, you have Junk Divers, things like that. And like one of the things in my deck is Spine of Ishthaw, which I just am trying to sack and just reoccur.
Ugin's Nexus, get an extra turn.
I mean, oh God, ew, gross. But yes, I do despise extra turns, but yes. A hidden gem that's only like, what, $1 right now at the time of filming this is Scrap Heap. Whenever an artifact or enchantment is put into your graveyard from play, gain 1 life. It's a 3-mana artifact. That's it.
That works really well with a rock ass also, for sure.
There's also all the food synergies. Like there's Apothecary White from the Clue. You can pay 1, tap it, tap X, untap foods you control, and you create X11 white human creature tokens. So you just have like an instant army by tapping just all your artifacts down for 1 mana. It's kind of wild.
Ooh.
Like Nicola. when you're sacrificing
food
to get
treasures.
Yeah, Nuka-Cola
machine, though, goes off with a ham sandwich, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
because then
yes.
All those treasures become foods, so you sacrifice treasures, and then you get more foods, we'll make more treasures. It's a bit of an infinite loop if you can untap those treasures immediately.
An unsung soul warden. The one that most people don't think about. Leonin Elder. This checks whenever an artifact comes into play, you gain a life. Any artifact. So it's like a soul warden, but for artifacts. And I do think that, not that it needs much more love, but what do y'all think about Descent into Avernus? You know, maybe this card, it finally might be good, you know? But no, like, it's obviously very good in this deck, because Descent into Avernus does exactly what you want to do. You burn the hell out of people, and then on top of that, you get so many treasures.
Yeah, and if you're gaining so much life, then you can kind of, like, afford the symmetrical burn of stuff like Descent a lot more, because you're getting a ton of life with your commander. What do you care if you're taking a bunch of damage? This is also the most popular commander from the set, if you look on EDH Rec, and it's actually not even, like, that close at this point. It's kind of, like, far away the most popular commander from the set, so it seems like everyone really likes the lobster. But, all right, let's keep moving on. My first card... I think one of the most interesting aspects of the set are the spacecraft. And the spacecraft, still got to kind of get a sense of how strong they actually are, but I think they're really cool designs. So one of the spacecraft that I'm hyped about is Inspirit Flagship Vessel. This was, I believe, the backup commander in the Kilo
Commander.
It's the other way. It's a face commander in the deck that also has Kilo, although Kilo, I think, is the more popular of the two. But anyway, Inspirit's a 3-mana Jeskai spacecraft. If you don't know spacecraft, they have this station mechanic, so you can tap your creatures at sorcery speed, and if you do, you put charge counters on the spacecraft equal to their power, and then once you get up to a certain number, it does things. So once you get at least one charge counter at the beginning of combat on your turn, you can put your choice of a +1/+1 counter or two charge counters on up to one other target artifact, and then once you get up to 8 counters, it is a 5/5 flying that makes other artifacts you control hexproof and indestructible, which is actually very, very strong. So I think Inspirit, the thing I like about this is a spacecraft commander that is really built for a spacecraft style of deck. This, if you want to play a whole bunch of spacecraft, this is kind of your fleet leader, because once you start charging this up, this really does a good job of protecting your other spacecraft. You can put charge counters on them to turn them on without having to tap your creatures, and then eventually it's going to make all your other artifacts, which are going to be all your spacecraft, hexproof and indestructible to protect them, and it turns into a pretty big flyer. So I think it's a super cool card, and one of the things I've learned about the spacecrafts and also the planets that work kind of like the spacecrafts with the station mechanic is they work really well in artifact decks. We kind of talked about this last week, because the artifact decks really good at making big constructs, which can quickly station them up and turn them on. So it's just like a very natural fit there as well. So I think Inspirit, for me, it's basically a spacecraft commander. I also have a soft spot for charge counter decks. The first deck I ever built in Magic was like an Aeon Storm charge counter deck way back in like original Mirrodin, like in that era. And this reminds me of that. If I ever try to rehash my Aeon Storm deck as a commander deck, I think this would be the commander, just because it can put charge counters on things, which is a really sweet effect from the command zone. But I'm curious, what do you guys think of these new spacecraft and Inspirit in specific?
Inspirit in specific, I like because it's charge counters, because I didn't do any new counter or something, so we can finally...
It synergizes with
Mirrodin again, yeah.
I like that. I think this card is like very, very super consistent. I would say like the power floor of this card is very, very high. Because it's 3 mana, so it comes out pretty early. Yep. It's not even a creature, which I think is usually a benefit, because almost every single commander deck is well suited to blow up creatures. Every color has access to creature removal, and it's like the most common you'll find in decks. But artifacts is a little bit trickier. Like black, for example, won't have a lot of ways of dealing with an artifact and stuff. So it sticks around a lot until it becomes a creature. And when it becomes a creature, it also kind of fills one gap that artifacts have, which is being very susceptible to a Vandal Blast or a Bane of Progress or whatever. This, as long as this is on the battlefield, your opponents have to take this out first before they can blow up your board. And again, just 3 mana as an investment. And like you said, it's very easy to charge it up when you need it to do that. So I really like that. And I really like, again, like how you said with charge counters, this is a really cool mechanic. And there's certain like mana rocks, for example, that work really well with charge counters. Everflowing Chalice, Empowered Auto Generator. And I know there's one other one.
Astral Cornucopia.
Well, All of these, they tap for mana equal to the number of charge counters on it. So this, every single turn, you can put two counters on it. That's two more mana being tapped with your mana rocks and stuff. So I really like this. It's very, very consistent, and it's cool. It just does cool things.
And if you want to be mean, like, there's some pretty strong charge counter stuff, like Magistrate's Scepter for taking extra turn. Lux Cannon can be blowing something up pretty much every turn. So there's some pretty strong payoffs once you start going down the charge counter path.
I do love me some Lux Cannon, though. Lux Cannon is so sick.
Lux Cannon is such a cool card. It's such a bad card.
It's terrible. But maybe now with the move towards more and more, like, you know, like a charge counter like play, it's kind of nice, right?
Yeah. Throwing some proliferate stuff in, and you got yourself a commander deck.
It is kind of awkward that it turns into a creature and then turns everything indestructible, because then you can just path it or sort it. So it would be nice if it stayed a non-creature there.
That is one of the tensions I found with, like, some of these spacecraft is sometimes turning them into a creature is actually a downside. Sometimes you don't actually want to turn them on, but you have the choice with a card like this, right? The only problem is then you don't get the indestructible and hexproof and everything else, but you could just leave it out with, like, one counter and let it put charge counters on things or plus one counters on things.
I think it would be a little bit annoying to deal with if it wasn't a creature but gave everything else hexproof and indestructible, just because, like, then, yeah, you couldn't path it or anything, and it would be kind of difficult. I mean, not impossible, obviously, because a lot of decks still have access to, like, disenchants, but...
I think it would have to cost way more mana if they were going to do that. Like, if that was the first mode, was hexproof and indestructible, it'd probably be, like, 7 mana or something, and probably less cool overall, but... Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep moving on. Time for round two. Phil, what do you got for us?
All right, I think this card is pretty scary. I haven't seen it yet, obviously, but Sammy Wildcard Captain, 6 mana, 4/4 double strike vigilance.
Oh, yeah.
And then spells you cast have affinity for artifact, not non-artifact spells, which is usually how they write this. So, first of all, Eldrazi, I'm pretty easy to cast with this, but you also have combos. Like Ancestral Statue will just infinitely loop once you have 4 artifacts. And it's just crazy scary. I think until turn 6, I guess in this one you actually play Mana Rocks because they double ramp. So it's not just turn 6. It's like turn 4 or something, and then you poop out your entire hand. At least you're not blue, so you don't get all the card draw from casting all these artifacts. It seems super pop-offy, though, and I'm scared to play this because I think you have to be dealt with before you cast this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really strong, but I think it's, I don't know if it's going to lead to that many super fun games, because I feel like it's going to be one of those commanders that, like you said, you either make sure Sammy, like, never sticks on the battlefield and you can kill it instant speed, or kill the Sammy player, or the Sammy player is just going to super pop off once Sammy comes down, because that's, like, what else? Yeah. Affinity is just, like, one of the strongest mechanics in the history of Magic, and just giving it to literally all your spells is kind of wild, even on 6 drop, and it's pretty big. Like, it's a 4/4 double strike vigilant, so it actually can get in there combat damage wise too.
I mean, yeah, this card is one of the cards I actually, so I had this in my Ragoth list, but then I ended up cutting it.
Was it too good or too bad?
He's 6 mana.
Yeah.
He is very expensive. I mean, like, don't get me wrong. I think there's probably better decks for it than Ragoth, right? Because if what am I going to do? Give my, like, food affinity, right? Yeah. Like, which is, like, 2 mana, right? So, no, I think this is better for big mana things, because then you can pay for that big mana cost. But it is a very strong card once you get to that, whatever that big mana artifact deck is. But as of right now, I think he's just okay. He's kind of expensive, right? I think that's the biggest
restriction.
I mean, luckily,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, luckily.
It's a build around. Like, you need to, if you just have a deck that is, like, basically all colorless and you have a lot of mana rocks, you get out Sammy and then you just start chaining together, like, Eldrazi Titans into the One Ring, into, like, I don't know, Portal to Phyrexia, and then just, like, keep snowballing from there. Like, you could, like, cast Sammy and then win the same turn, basically. If built around. If you just throw it into any affinity deck, it might be awkward. Especially if there's a lot of color pips. You know, like, if a lot of your spells have color pips in them, or they're not, like, big haymakers, then Sammy just kind of, like, cheats like one thing or two things out in a turn and that's it, and then it just dies, and that's not very exciting.
I feel like it's almost like a combo commander. At least that's how I would build it. Is like it doesn't have to be an infinite combo, but you build your deck in a way where when you play Sammy, you're planning on either literally winning the game or pulling incredibly far ahead, so you probably can't lose that turn. Like you got to trust that your deck is built where that one turn is going to be enough, because people are going to know that you can't let Sammy stick around. It reminds me of Samet, the like start your engines one, but like way better. It's like start your engines Samet wanted to be, but this is just like so much easier.
Yeah, talking about easy, the flavor text is absolute flavor fail. The hard way it is. Turns out it's the absolute easy way because everything is free.
All right, what do we got next? Tomer, give us a commander.
Okay, so I have one that's almost Sammy-ish. But not quite combo, just big beats. Just big beats in a more chill, I would say more chill way. It's Tanuk Steadfast Second. So this is the second version of Tanuk, the mythic version. It's mono red, so it's two and double red for 4 mana total. Legendary creature Kavu Pilot. It's a 3/5. Other creatures of control have haste, and artifact cards and red creature cards in your hand have warp 3. So two and a red. This is basically like Haymaker.deck for mono red. You can cheat out big creatures like your Atali. You can cheat out like an Atali Primal Storm as haste and melee attack. Generally speaking, it's a 6 mana spell, but you can warp it in for just 3 mana. So it's like a huge mana discount. But you can also cheat into play giant artifacts. So like, again, Portal to Phyrexia, 9 mana artifact, warp it in for just 3 mana. That's a 6 mana discount. All your opponents lose 3 creatures. Yeah, it goes away afterwards, so you don't get to use its upkeep afterwards, but you can cast it later on or whatever, and you already got the value. Like, you got immense value out of this. So it's like almost like mono red sneak attack, but also you can sneak in like giant artifacts.
Is this not just basically Purphoros? Not the Norin Purphoros, but like the 5 mana Purphoros. I feel Bronze Blooded. It feels very similar to me. It's like Purphoros, you give up death triggers, which is one of the things that Purphoros plays with sometimes, is stuff that like, because you sacrifice a creature on your end step, they play a bunch of death trigger stuff, but you get cast triggers because warping is casting a spell. So you get to play whatever Cityscape Leveler and stuff like that you wouldn't actually play probably in a Purphoros deck. You give up some graveyard synergies, I guess, maybe because stuff's going to exile. But to me, it's kind of just like better Purphoros. Like if you had a Purphoros deck, I think this is just Purphoros, but slightly better. In some ways,
I disagree.
Also, warp,
really, you don't think it's better? You think it's worse, Purphoros?
I mean, I own a Purphoros stack. I would say this is worse, Purphoros. So,
oh, it's one mana cheaper though. What do you think makes it? Just because you can kill it easier, is that what makes it worse?
Yeah, Purphoros is indestructible, so I think that's a huge, because like you play a Tanuk, and if a playgroup has seen Tanuk more than once, they'd be like, oh, okay, we kill Tanuk.
we're gonna
and
die.
Then you're stuck with like all these overcosted spells in mono red. And it's also like hard to protect in mono red. Mono red kind of sucks at two things, and that's ramp and protection. It sucks at a lot of things, but ramp and protection are two big ones. So you can't take out Tanuk. The deck is like really having a bad time at that point. So Purphoros, indestructible, very nice. And the other nice thing is you can also set up for like bigger I win turns, because Purphoros can activate its ability at instant speed, so you can have like surprise blockers, but the easiest way to do it, the sneak attack way of doing it, is you wait until the end step before your turn. You activate Purphoros, you put on two things or whatever, your turn, you put two more things, swing in, kill everybody, bam, boom, done. So I feel like Purphoros is still better, but Tanuk probably a lot better if your opponents still believe in removal. That's probably good.
I guess that makes sense. It's probably worse Purphoros overall, but it is a Kavu, and Kavu is kind of cool. So.
They're cool. They are cool. It's cooler than Purphoros.
Cooler, yeah. Hipster Purphoros. all right, what do we got next? Krim.
Okay, so I don't know if it's just because the big number, right? I think it's because the big number on it. I think I just like Dawnsire, Sunstar Dreadnought. This is a spacecraft, and it's got station, right? Once you get it to 10+, whenever you attack, Dawnsire deals 100 damage to up to one target creature or planeswalker. Now, you don't have to attack with Dawnsire. You just have to attack. And then 20 plus, it has flying. It's a 20-20, right? Still one shy of commander damage, by the way. But, like, you know what? That's okay. Make them work for it, I guess. But the main thing here is this is just one of those things where it feels like the vibes of it is like, hey, I've got my board. Here's all my creatures. I'm battling y'all, and I'm gonna ask my ship up in orbit to like obliterate you because you've been mean to me, right? Yeah. I need to clear the way. And there's something about that that just feels so satisfying. Obviously, you're going into colorless, but this is kind of a 5-mana do-nothing. Is this card good? I don't think so, but will it be fun? Oh my god, yes. This is like peak Timmy. This is like Timmy, like, but in space.
Hmm. I wish this had colors, though. At least red, so you can play Brash Taunter. Because obviously it's the best Stuffy Door commander of all time. But then again, you're kind of missing out on the best Stuffy Door. I guess the new cage with a baby head in it. I'm blanking on the name.
Skittering Beater or something. That card is insanely good.
Yeah, this is strictly better Stuffy Door. It's better in every way. Wait, let me see. Whatever, keep talking. I'm going to find it.
That was actually my first thought with this card, too, is I really like Dawnsire. I think it's super cool. I love Stuffy Dow's style decks. And obviously, with a Stuffy Dow, you throw the 100 damage at your own creature, hit the Stuffy Dow, then you can throw it at someone's face. It's basically a way you can convert that 100 damage from only hitting creatures and planeswalkers to hitting your opponents, which is really neat. It would be way easier to pull off those shenanigans if it was in other colors and you could have some Screaming Nemesis and Brash Taunters and so forth. Colorless is just so weird with this card. Like, I feel like, I don't know if you guys feel like this. Do you feel like all colorless decks end up looking the same? I feel like every time I've played against a colorless deck, it's kind of the same thing. No matter what commander someone's playing, it's just like, I'm going to ramp into big colorless stuff because that's kind of all colorless does. So I wonder what's going to like set this apart. So I think it's a super cool design, but I'm afraid it's going to end up being just another colorless commander that actually, despite being super cool, you just kind of cast Eldrazi or whatever. And that's actually what your deck does.
I don't think the set needs Eldrazi. It's going to be definitely artifact-y because that's what colorless is, like the absence of card pool, right? So you gotta you're stuck with artifact base, but I feel like the fact that it becomes a 2020 flyer just with evasion means that like one, what is it, like Forsaken Monument or something, if that's on the battlefield and you swing with this, somebody just dies. So
somebody's like, definitely getting Shadow Realm.
How do you build around this, like outside of Stuffy Doll shenanigans? Is there a building around this, or do you just play good colorless stuff and you're like, yeah, I got a cool spacecraft as my commander? I guess that's what I was trying to say.
It could be an artifact.
It is very Timmy. So, like, you are just trying to throw big number in under,
just throw
on
big
the
things
board.
Out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give like, it but without, link. That'd be fun.
Ooh, lifelink.
Giving it lifelink money as well, right?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I don't actually want to kill anybody. I just want to hit things for 100 damage.
Which
is weird.
It's so sad that you can't play Haunted Nest or something. By the way, the Skitter Spine doesn't work. It's when it attacks or blocks or becomes the target of a spell, it deals damage equal to its power to each opponent. So I don't know why I thought this was a Stuffy Doll. Whatever. Okay. But it kind of sucks that you don't have colors. Like Hornet's Nest would be nice. Anything this that would be, profits off damage.
This would be my pitch. Okay. You put like a Loxodon Warhammer or something on this. Okay.
Yep.
So you can one-shot one person. You gain a bunch of life. Then you either flux cannon people's faces off and then he kills the table.
Okay, that's okay. I can get behind that. That's pretty cute. I like it. And maybe
I'm gonna make Power Stones playable.
And I guess like maybe the challenge of this card is turning it on, right? You do need 10 counters to get to the damage mode and 20 counters to actually turn it into a creature. So maybe that's what you're focused on as you're building, like playing creatures that are big and cheap that can actually do this or whatever, charge counter synergies. But maybe that's where the deck building comes in, is like, how do I actually turn this on as quickly as possible?
I mean, that warp 9/9 for 9 that has a warp of 3 is definitely going in this deck, right? These are just, you've essentially loaded your deck up with a bunch of giant colorless vanilla cards. That's what they are. And there is something very satisfying about it. It doesn't need a reason other than big number. And that's what I'm here for. At least that's the way I'm going to build it, because this is the next deck behind Ragos that I'm building.
Interesting.
I respect it.
Well, let's keep moving forward. So for my second pick, we're sticking with spacecraft. We're jumping over to the other precon deck, the Jund precon, for Hearthal the World Seed. So Hearthal is a 4-mana spacecraft. It has station, just like the other spacecraft. Once you get 2 counters, you can pay 1, tap it, sack a land to draw 2 cards, and play an extra land this turn. So kind of like Yttrog monster shenanigans almost. And then if you get up to 8 counters, it is a 6/7 flying vigilance haste that whenever you sack a land, each opponent loses 2 life. And I think this card's super cool. So on one hand, it's another Lands Matters commander. We've seen many of these, right? We've seen so many, like, green, rampy, get cards in and out of your graveyard. It's a very, very green Jund thing to do. So we have many similar commanders. The thing that I think is cool about this is really that last mode. That's what intrigues me, is that once you get it turned on, when you sack a price of land, each opponent loses 2 life. So for me, this seems like almost kind of a cool combo piece. We got a ton of cards in the deck itself, the precon, that care about sacking lands, but it seems pretty easy to me to just like do a bunch of ramping and then like scape shift, sack all your lands, get a bunch of new lands, and then Splendid Reclamation, get all your lands back from the graveyard, and then sack them all again to a Pitiless Carnage, and just like combo kill, burn the table out of the game, or like ramp and Zoramorb to sack everything and then get everything back from the graveyard to do it again. So I see it as this like Land Aristocrat style commander, which I just think is super cool, because I feel like we haven't really had that before. Like, we've had Aristocrats for sacking creatures, we've been getting some for sacking artifacts. To me, this is like Jund Aristocrats for sacking lands on a spacecraft. But I'm curious what you guys like. What do you think of Hearthal?
I think the best thing about Hearthal is that it just looks really cool to me. Yeah. So like this alone, like the sacking a land stuff is like, you can do that. Eh. You can do that across. That's like not new. I do think that just this ability of killing people though is nice. Mm-hmm. I do like that. These landfall things now, where again, just like the green red Tanuk that Phil brought up, it's like I no longer have to watch you sift through your deck from graveyard.
Let me die. Some mercy.
Yeah, just let me go. I don't need to be here anymore. Just kill me, please. So the more you can expedite that, whatever. Yeah. Do your thing.
I don't want to be a grouch, but I feel like every single lands deck is actually just doing this, like, sacrifice.
But you sacrifice the lands, Tomer.
Yeah, Titania existed for, like, 10 years now.
And then you get it back, and it deals damage.
And the Gitrog monster does the same thing, and Lord Windgrace, both of them do the same thing. Scape
but it's a spacecraft.
Wow. What an innovation of scape shift in a lands deck. Who would have ever done that one before?
No one's thought of that
before. I don't
know.
So it's like, okay, what it's doing is not innovative in the slightest, in my opinion. Yeah. But early on, it's an engine that is very hard to interact with because it's a spacecraft. Then you turn
engine.
It on when you're ready to win the game, right?
Turn it on.
Yeah, cool. I ramp and I draw cards in a lands deck? No way. Insane. Anyway, but yeah, so you do that, and it's hard to interact with because it's not a creature. And then it becomes a creature. It's really hitting people in the face for 6 damage just with evasion. And you can still, it has vigilance, so you can still activate its ability. And then, yeah, it has a finisher. So, like, thank God. I much prefer this over, like, give me this over Tatyova any day, because at least I die. Just kill me. You've got the engine going, just let me go.
It does kind of suck that you have to pay mana. I don't know if it's...
Oh, come in our lands deck, Phil, come on.
Yeah, but it's so...
The lands deck really needs help.
How much mana do you have in your lands deck? You have like 12?
I just don't like...
Or something like
that?
It
just does nothing with them. I want to play it on turn 4 and then...
You need to land to get a power boost. Is what I'm
yeah, not good. Not good enough.
If you think this is too powerful, you can just play Lord Windgrace if you want to power it up, right? It seems very fair.
I don't think it's too powerful. I do like that the last mode can just straight up kill the table. Like, that's the part that I think is intriguing.
Yeah, but for sacrificing 20 lands.
I think it's better than Lord Windgrace, actually. I think it's better, unless you're going for Jokal Hops. If you're going for, like, Jokal Hops Obliterate, then Lord Windgrace is better. But I feel like this is actually better because...
Are you allowed to play Jokal Hops? I didn't know that was a thing. Can I actually make everyone sack their lands if I play Hearthal? Is that acceptable?
You know what?
Is there a Hearthal exception?
Sure, you could actually do it, I guess.
Pop off, King. Do your thing.
I'm okay. It's getting even better now. Now I might actually build this deck.
I think this is Commander's Cast, and I'm glad that it kills me.
All right, we got one more round to go. We're getting to the bottom of the barrel of our 2022 commanders, yeah. But we still have a few good ones left. What do we got for round three, Bill? What do we got?
I don't know if I would call this the bottom of the barrel. I guess if you compare it to Urza, but still, it's one of those things that you probably get killed before you do the thing. Memnon. M-E-N-O-N. The right hand. We haven't seen the left hand yet, but 5 mana, 3/4 flying. You may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may cast artifact spells from the top of your library. And on the theme of combining stuff that you used to use two cards to do, now you can also. Artifacts you control have tap, add blue, spend this mana only to cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand. Which should be fine because the card itself is a future sight, so, and you're probably playing a lot of artifacts because you want to have artifacts to tap. It feels a little like this, a lot of text that you usually ignore. I guess the card draw in artifact decks is not, I mean, now it is. Now we have this card artifact spaceship that draws cards with us, so I don't know. It just seems like you play this. And then you do the Urza thing of popping off, but now you also have the future sight on the commander. At least you can't counter as good as in Urza because you can't stack up cards in your hand. But, that's scary.
I feel like this is just a busted combo commander. Like, yeah. The only thing I see when I see this is like, oh, I just play Sensei's Divining Top and a cost reducer. Oh, yeah. And then I get to draw my deck. And maybe I have like a Hullbreaker Horn. I bounce all everyone's permanents and you can't do anything. So I think that was the first thing I thought of with this card. Is if you build around it, I would probably build it as like a busted combo commander. Or at least that's the spikiest way to build it. Because I think people are going to be scared of this anyway. So I think you just got to kind of... It's an artifact deck, right? People know artifact decks are scary. Yeah, maybe it's not quite Urza, but it still has a ton of combo potential. So I think people are going to be naturally afraid of this card. So I think you just got to embrace it and be like full on like combo, and I'm going to do my thing. And if you can stop me, then good. And if not, I'm going to have a ridiculous combo turn.
I just like jellyfish. Again, what's so funny here is like this set, the playability doesn't matter. I like jellyfish.
I mean, that's the reason why Loth is the best, right?
I know we're focused on commanders today, but I feel like this is a great 99 card. Like, I think if we're an artifact deck, like Mystic Pizza Oven, you play that in a lot of artifact decks to generate card advantages, does kind of the same thing. So,
I don't think artifacts need any more help, once again.
Yeah. If you're in an artifact deck that has like some top deck manipulation, because like you can only cast, so you can't play like if you hit like a land or something, you can't play the land or anything, so you're stuck with that. Sensei Stop is like obviously the most busted thing, and also gonna combo off very easily. And then if you have anything that's like whenever you cast an artifact, you make like an artifact token, like Forensic Gadgeteer, clue, and then you can immediately tap the clue for mana, and you keep going.
Then it gets wild.
It'll be very fun. I think it's more fun than the 99. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just like it looks like a combo deck.
That's my worry. Is I don't know how to build it. Well, I think I would just naturally build it as a combo deck and either kill everyone or get killed. But
I think if you play it there, it's boring. You just whiff. You cast like two spells and you're like, I hit a land. Okay, pass. And you die.
Yeah,
like
zones.
Terrified of you.
It's just not. It's just other than your hand. So I guess wild cards and adventures.
Warp
but
cards.
Is there anything actually good?
Impulse draw. If you have access to red, you can
that's a 99
impulse draw and cast from exile.
You could build it as like a graveyardy commander. There's no like blue past and flames effect really, but flashback spells,
breach,
and things like that.
Breach. Yeah,
yeah. If you were in the 99, it would be absurd with breach, but.
The non-combo wins Underworld Breach.
Yeah.
Begin.
Yeah. We're just combo, so we will have
combo. Yeah.
You are back. All right. Speaking of combos, Tomer, what do you got for your last pick of the day?
All right. This is one that's like, so I had a couple that I really like. So the Ragost, I'm a big fan of. Servandum, those are the top two. This one, I respect. You know, I wouldn't build it, but I respect it. It's Kilo Apogee Mine. This is the secondary commander of the Jeskai artifact deck. It's blue, red, and white, so also just 3 mana. A legendary artifact creature, robot artificers, a 3/3 of haste, and when it becomes tapped, you proliferate. Proliferate kind of powerful mechanic, right? And this is doing it for zero mana. All you have to do is tap it. Now, attacking kind of sucks because it's just a 3-3, so it doesn't really want attacking. But we're in a set that's all about, you know, charging up your spacecrafts and stuff. That's a top ability. So if you build around Kilo, you never need to attack with it. You can do some very busted things. Find ways of tapping it for mana, for example, like through Improvise or an Urza or a Paradise Mantle, what have you, a Springleaf Drum, and then you can proliferate, charge up the stations, whatever. But things get much more ridiculous if you find ways of untapping it, because the more times you tap it, the more times you proliferate. There's not once per turn clause or anything you have to worry about. So this lends itself, obviously, for some very easy combos, usually three-card combos. One of the most powerful ones available is Aura of Dominion. You enchant Kilo. You can pay one mana, tap an untapped creature you control, untap enchanted creature. That creature could just be Kilo, by the way, that you tap. So you can pay one mana, tap Kilo, untap Kilo. You get the proliferate trigger. Pair that with something that whenever it gets a counter on it, you can remove a counter and make a mana. There's a couple of these, but the most common one is Pentad Prism. Pentad Prism, remove a charge counter, make a mana of any color. So you have that, Kilo, and enchanted with Aura of Dominion. You can tap Kilo, untap Kilo, proliferate for one mana, get a charge counter on Pentad Prism, remove that counter. Now you have a mana, and you repeat that over and over again. Infinite proliferates. If you have poison counters on your opponents, they all die. If you have a walking ballista, infinite damage. Blah, 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 blah. A billion different ways of doing it. Also, a lot of variations of this combo. So it's a combo deck. You can play it fairly, and it's still very, very good, because you can proliferate at least once per turn for no mana, or very good on a three drop. But then it can just win out of nowhere very easily. So what do you guys think about Kilo?
That is my question to you, right? Because, like, I feel like in the current year, we now have so many busted artifacts, right? That just go infinite, like, just with a stiff breeze, right? So, when you mentioned the fair version of that, that's what's intriguing me. Because I feel like when I look at an artifact deck, I know the fun for me is making it not broken.
Yeah. Well, I think the fair version of Inspirit, like, I think
Steel
the fair
Overseer,
version...
some Memnites, maybe an Ornithopter, tap and get a counter, and then that gets tapped, you get another counter, and you're cooking. You'll
but
get
like,
them for
like
4 damage.
About affinity.
Yeah. I think trying to build Kilo fair is like a trap. Because you can go build the fair Kilo and then people will still be terrified of you. And then they'll hate you out of the game. And you'll be bitter about it, and then you'll be like, okay, I'll play unfair Kilo, and then you'll also be unhappy. It's just a cycle of unhappiness. So I just think if you want to play Kilo fairly, you just play In Spirit. It still puts counters on stuff, but it's very chill. You don't win out of nowhere with In Spirit.
But Tomer, I'm a robot guy, and I love MPG Wally.
That's true.
So, like, how do I build Wally fairly? That's the thing, right? Because that's always the challenge.
That's my deck, Tetson. Tetson is like, it's good. It's very strong, but I would consider it fair. And it's a gnome.
Tetson
it's a gnome robot. It's hilarious.
And it transforms
into big Tetson. It's very cute. I love him to death.
I think the funniest part about this card is like the infinite proliferate. If your opponents have a one ring, you can just proliferate the one ring and make them die if the counter's on the one ring. Or like
that's how we finally get Seth off playing the one ring.
You might finally make me stop playing the one ring if you start Kiloing.
I guess that's the one thing that would be really funny. I build a Kilo infinite proliferate deck, but I promise to only proliferate everyone
your
else.
Stuff. Yeah. And then you gave them a poison counter.
Yeah.
Oh,
all right. Let's move on. Krim, what do you got for your final pick?
So my final pick is kind of actually, I played with it in Standard, and I kind of am in love with it. It's Halia. This is a 3-drop from Edge of Eternities, 2W, and whenever Halia or another creature or artifact enters, you gain a life. But at the beginning of your end step, draw a card if you've gained 3 or more life this turn, and has warp for 1. This is like a super sweet Soul Warden, right? It gives you the gaffer combined with a Soul Warden. Like, I really like that. It's even got the stat combination of the, like, pretty much, right? It makes it a 3-3, whereas gaffer's a 2-3. So, I don't know. I think this is just a fun card, and having the ability to warp is just so big for like some explosive turns. The one cost turns it into what is like a soul one for yourself, but the main thing is just the gaffer part attached to it.
It's not every turn. Like the gaffers.
It's only your turn.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
So I guess you get slightly less card draw because you can't trigger on your opponent's turn, but you get life gain out of it. I love this card. The card's super cool. If you want a Soul Warden as your commander, this is about as close, I think, as you can get to having a Soul Warden as your commander. I do think it's one of the cards that we got, like, Minwu in the last set, which is kind of a ridiculous life gain commander. We have some really good mono-white life gain commanders. So, personally, this is another one. I'm like, oh, I'm going to jam this in the 99 of so many life gain decks. As a commander, I think it's, like, okay, and it's kind of cute, but I don't think it's, like, especially strong as a commander, personally. But I'm curious what you guys think. Are you hyped about this being a commander, or is it more, like, 99 for you?
Kind of boring that it's mono white, I guess. Would be nice if there was like an interesting other color. It's shocking that it's another card that combines two cards that synergize with each other, and it's on one card now.
Yeah,
that's Modern Magic design. Just staple together two things, and
you should be happy it doesn't have lifelink. Okay, if it had lifelink, then it would be true 2025
guys,
design.
I think lifelink or gaining life in Commander might be the thing to do now. In the current, it might be the cool guy, I think.
It actually is. It is pretty powerful.
Because before, this is gaining life never mattered, right? Because like, you're just like, okay, whatever, I don't really care. But slowly...
Normalized combos. That's what I was saying.
I think like the combination of Soul Warden and Gaffer lets you play this in a lot more decks, I think. Because Gaffer, you really have to be a life gain deck to make it good. A Soul Warden, you need support for the... I mean, I guess in some sense, gaining life is fine anyway, but you really want extra life gain synergies to make it good. But this, because it combines both together, and it even triggers on artifacts randomly, which can do some wild stuff if you're making like artifact tokens, the trinket tokens. But the fact that it triggers itself and triggers whenever a creature enters, I think you can kind of play this fairly, right? And just like play this and play a couple of creatures and gain enough life that you draw a card on your end step, and it only 3 mana. It doesn't take that many cards drawn with this to make it worth its mana value.
I think
if you want a Soul Warden in the command zone, this has to be like one of the best
ones. I think this is the one. Yeah.
A Soul Warden, right?
For literal Soul Warden.
Literal Soul Warden. I mean, Daxos, Blessed by the Sun.
Also. But Daxos is better than Daxos.
Doesn't draw you cards.
Yeah, it's better than that.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, this will draw
Daxos is a big booty. Like,
it does get the big
butt.
Devotion toughness is kind of nice. I don't know.
The dumpy is there, but the dumpy don't draw me cards, Tomer. I'm sorry.
It's true. I think it's fine as a commander. I don't think it's, like, the most powerful thing, for sure. But, like, that's fine. Like, there's multiple brackets. Not every deck has to be, like, super strong. We were just, like, complaining about, like, Kilo and stuff.
I think that's exactly what I want. I was going to like kind of like talk about when it comes to all the commanders this set. It feels nice that I look at this and it's like, hey, I can comfortably say that this is a set that will give me a lot more bracket twos, right? Mm-hmm. A lot more bracket two play styles, and I'm here for that. So it's nice to just have simple magic.
Would you all run this in artifacts? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, just to finish up the life gain thing, and then we talk about artifacts. I just wonder if, like, if you're an Aerith Gainsborough fan or a Minwu fan from Final Fantasy, I feel like you'll have a lot of people that build around those and are just going to, like, jam it in the 99 rather than, like, build a brand new life gain deck around it. Just because we got a couple of really good life gain commanders just from Final Fantasy that were pretty popular. But in the artifact deck, I think the answer is yes. Like, if you're playing Academy Manufacturer type stuff, if you're really spewing out artifacts.
Artifact tokens.
Yeah, if you're doing stuff like that, I think this is definitely worth including. I played it a bit in Standard during early access, and I was surprised that someone would, like, get lost one of my things, and I get a couple maps, and I gain life, and just, like, how much that was adding up over the course of the game. So I think if you're, like, actively trying to make those tokens, it's really good. If you're just hard casting actual real artifacts, then I'm kind of like, I mean, it's still okay, but I think it depends on how many artifacts you can be making. Anyway, let's move on. We got one more commander, and apparently I am just the spacecraft guy because it is another spacecraft in Infinite Guideline Station. So, funny story on this one. Was working on a deck for Commander Clash for an episode that's going to be coming up, and I knew I wanted to build spacecraft, and my initial impulse was, I'm going to build Infinite Guideline Station because that's the cool five-color spacecraft. So I started to build Infinite Guideline Station, and I pretty quickly realized the card's cool, but it's actually not a commander for a whole bunch of spacecraft. It's really a multicolor commander. So it's a five mana spacecraft, 5 mana, 5 colors. It says when it enters, create a tap 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token for each multicolor permanent you control. And then it has station. And once you get up to 12 or more counters on it, and it is flying, it's a 7/15. And when it attacks, you draw a card for each multicolor permanent you control. So to me, this is very much like a Niv-style card. We have several Nivs that just want you to play a whole bunch of multicolor cards. A lot of the Nivs are specifically about two-color pairs, which is kind of where this is different. With this, you can play three-color cards, you can play hybrid cards, you can play five-color cards. But this just really wants you to play a ton of cards that are multicolored. And that's all you really got to do, because if you can get a bunch of multicolor stuff on the battlefield, this is going to make a huge army of robots. Those robots, sadly, they're tapped, so they can't station right away. But the next turn, they should be able to tap to station up the Infinite Guideline Station. And then you just attack and draw a whole bunch of cards, draw a new hand, and then you're kind of off to the races. So I think that's kind of the direction that I would go with this card, is like the general Ferris Rockerick stuff. You got stuff like Leyline of the Guild Pack to just make everything multicolor. So I think it's really like a multicolor matters card, but I think it's actually a very powerful commander if you want to go that play style. The combination of making a bunch of bodies and then drawing a bunch of cards, and it seems pretty easy to station up in a deck that's built around it. So I think it's actually a very strong multicolor commander, but what do you guys think about this one?
Coalition victory.
Yes. Coalition victory.
Finally, we have a 5-color commander that's actually 5-color Sakas. Thank God. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, it is kind of nice. It's not tucked away in the flavor text zone.
I'm looking at you, Tara.
Kind of cool that you can flicker it. It's one of the few spacecrafts that have an effect, even though you don't have to crew it.
That's true.
Or like station it.
It's got to enter Yun Panharmonic on it, or Alish Nornet or whatever. Double up the triggers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, literally, I love Multicolor Matters Rainbow decks. Like, that's kind of my jam. There's a couple of them that exist, but this is my favorite. I like spacecrafts. Look at the art. It's very cool. And it's a cool effect. And it makes a big army. And then you could station it with the army, and then you draw a bunch of cards, and you're hitting people in the face for 7/3 hits with the spacecraft, and somebody dies. I like that a lot. It has evasion.
It survives Blast Act.
Thumbs up. Huh? Yeah. It survives Blast Act.
Survives the Blast
Act. That's very nice. There's also like a board wipe that's like, if like it kills everything that's not 5 colors or something. It was something very cheesy for like a Jared Cathalion deck. I'm like, hell yeah. I want to jam that so bad.
Oh, I'm trying to remember what it's called, but yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't even know how to look it up, honestly.
But it is.
But it's a thing.
Yeah. It's just a cool, like, you can jam kind of any multicolor cards you want.
Yeah.
You can just play all your favorite 5-color cards. It's going to generate a lot of value. There's no super harsh, outside of playing cards that are 2 colors, no super harsh restriction. This is going to kind of provide the card advantage for your deck and offer a lot of bodies. So it just, to me, seems like a super fun multicolor matters commander.
Mander.
Yep. I like it.
Anyway, I think those are top commanders from Edge of Eternities. Like we said before, compared to some sets, not a ton of commanders in the sets, but there are some really good ones. So you've heard our favorites. Let us know what you think. What commander is you most hyped to build around from the set? What do you think about the set in general from a commander perspective? Let us know in the comments, and we'll be back next week to talk even more commanders. So until then, have a lovely week, everyone. And this is a crew signing out.